Big news! Wayfair's end of season sale is here. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair. Plus amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals on home finds in every style. This is your last chance to score end of season savings, and it's happening now. Did we mention fast shipping on everything? Don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off now through September 2nd.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to SEO 101 on WMR.fm, episode number 506. This is Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and my co-host is my company senior SEO, Scott Van Ack. Well, we got a really good show for you today. Tons of stuff to talk about and lots of meat. So hope you enjoy. Well, let's start with SEO news here. The June core update has officially completed. Wow. Well, yeah, I know you wrote a bunch down here, so I'll let you take it away.
Yeah, so this one, it's kind of funny how they call it the June core update. It started, what, June 30th or something like that, the last day of June. Basically, it's a July core update. And actually, you'll see it referenced that like that in a few places where people are calling it the July update. But Google is officially calling it June. It took 16 days. There are reports that people who were hurt in the March and even September 2023 core updates have seen some recovery. So that's good. There was a lot of people saying that this is one of the most volatile core updates in a long time. Not a big surprise. They also were saying that the health industry is one of the highest hit or the hardest hit by this update. The finance industry saw slightly less fluctuation. How did you favor? Among my clients, what I'm generally seeing is some up and some down. For each individual client, they'll see some rankings up and some down. Nobody seems to be hit really hard as an individual, which is great. But I didn't really see anything substantial, so that's always good in our case, but not what happens always, but in this case it did. The usual, if you're hit by it, is wait, build good content. You know, we talk about it 1,000 times, but there are a few quotes here from a few industry experts that I felt were worth sharing. Glenn Gabe had said the June core update was a red hot broad core algorithm update, causing a lot of volatility across verticals and countries. And that's fitting since it rolled out right before the July 4th holiday, when we already see fireworks. Don't you love that? Google does it right before a holiday, always. Yep. Fridays, you know, Christmas Eve, all that kind of stuff. If I book a holiday, no matter what, guarantee they're going to do something crazy the day before. It doesn't matter when it is.
I'll get a lot of business.
That's right. Yeah, isn't that the truth? We always seem to get big contracts whenever I go away or Ross goes away.
So it's everyone, Scott's planning on doing a trip soon. So please give me a call. It's just about time. I want to make sure I keep the trend.
Yeah, I'm only going for a few days, but it's on Sunday. So you got to get all your contracts in by tomorrow.
Oh, so, I'm sure you got another one coming.
Yeah, exactly. So that's fun. Marie Haynes had said, I believe the June 25 core update marks the start of some significant changes in search where Google shifts further away from using traditional ranking signals and more towards using AI to identify content that's likely to be helpful. Seems pretty accurate to me, which is why I included
pretty
it.
Pretty obvious too, yeah.
Yeah, and Alita Solis had said brands are also seeing visibility improvements for many of their own branded terms due to fewer shopping packs, carousels, etc. shown above the first position. So that's always helpful too. If you have your own branded search, you certainly want to rank, and it sucks when you're not at the very top for that stuff. So it's over now, although there are a lot of reports that things are still kind of crazy right now. So I don't know if there's another update we rolled right into that isn't official yet, but we'll keep our eyes peeled and see.
Yeah. We're rolling right into this next one, the Google search core, because never mind. That isn't a different article.
No,
yeah,
but never mind. I can.
You could do that. Why don't you go for it?
I'm just going to do it, Ross.
Thank you.
So this is something I noticed. I just happened to notice this. I kind of forgot about it. In our last episode, we talked about how in Google Search Console, the Core Web Vitals statistics were showing the number of pages being tested plummeting. And it didn't make any sense. John Mueller had even said that, you know, they just changed the number of pages. They don't always scan everything. But it was happening to every single account I looked at, like every single one. Well, I checked and it is back. All of the drops have rebounded, and Google has said it was a bug and they fixed it. So go figure. But that's good. So you should see more accurate data in the Search Console section there.
Good. Nice to see some changes there. Positive. A nice tie-in, though, because for local SEO news, I wanted to just give you an update on last week's mention. That was when I discussed how the June 2025 Google update may be affecting local search impressions. So far, on the same local search forum thread, which is a pretty good barometer of such things because people are pretty active on there. So far, no one has responded that things have improved. And one person has said that they don't see any improvements yet, but they're working on older data. So we'll have to see. We don't know. If it hasn't improved, then we have to say that it wasn't part of that update, or it's just a long tail after, some sort of a, I don't know, considered a one of the after effects. And let's just hope it clears up. We don't know what's going on there. All right. In AI news, I'll might as well take this one too. Pew Research confirms Google AI Overviews is eroding the web ecosystem. Dun dun dun. Now that was the title in a Search Engine Journal article, which was pretty good. My favorite though of I was an article I read about the same topic from Ars Technica. I think it was really good because they're also a content specific company. They're getting a lot of their business from traffic to their sites. So they take this stuff pretty personally. Anyway, you'll see what I mean in a sec. A recent study by Pew Research shows AI Overviews is reducing clicks. Now, here are a few of the main bits here. It's a smaller study of 900 adults who agreed to install a browsing tracker for the month of March. The data set contains 70,000 unique Google queries. Of the results, they found that 1 in 5 searches now have AI Overviews. Only 8% of users who encountered an AI summary clicked on any links in the result, AI or otherwise. So that means only 8% of people did anything. For users who only saw standard search results, that's the search results we're used to seeing without AI, 15% of them clicked on a link. However, we should probably reverse that order. Only 8%, like I said, activated or did anything when there was AI summary. That's just over half, just under half of those people did anything versus what we used to have in a common search result without AI. Overall, only 1% of queries displaying an AI summary resulted in a click to a noted citation. Now, most frequently, those citations were for Wikipedia, YouTube, and Reddit, which account collectively for about 15% of all AI sources. 1%. The study further found that nearly 66% of all searches resulted in zero clicks. Far more troubling, Google users are more likely to end their browsing session after seeing an AI overview. Well, we don't know for sure they saw that. They just went there and saw a result and left. But that was a page with an AI overview. Perhaps expecting the result that they got was true. And well, no, I've seen personally quite a few that are incorrect. And that's because it's done by AI that hallucinates answers quite regularly, or at least facts within answers even. So be very, very, very careful. Don't take them as writ. It's just not the way to go. The Ars Technica article ends with something rather poignant, I thought. Here's a quote. Google's use of AI is changing the way people gather information and interact with search results. The trends are bad for web publishing. But Google's profits have never been higher. Funny how that works. Yeah. And I have extreme pity for anyone in the web publishing industry. I just feel terribly for them. I hope they keep going and doing well. I love reading Ars Technica and a lot of these other sites, but again, I don't do it every day. I don't particularly have it as my desktop. I have to find them. They pop up in different places. So this is really important. They need to keep showing up. So hopefully they do. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about OpenAI's LLM text files. Welcome back to SEO 101 on WMR.FM, hosted by myself, Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and my company's senior SEO, Scott Vanak. And I kind of messed up that last thing. This next story is, is OpenAI crawling the LLMS.txt?
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
File. Google says it won't. All right. It really says a lot already in the title, but tell us more, Scott.
Next. No. We've spoken a lot about LLMS.txt in recent shows. If you missed it, really simple. What LLMS.txt is it's a simple text file similar to robots.txt that guides LLMs on which content is most relevant. That's sort of at its core what it is. And see our other shows or AI overviews to learn more. Don't use AI overviews. So over at Google Search Central Live Deep Dive event, good old Gary over at Google, and I'm calling him Gary because I always say his last name wrong every single freaking time, and I can't ever get it right, and I don't know why, so I'm not even going to try.
Gary Eish.
Eish. Are you sure? It just seems wrong. That's probably why
I know
it
does, but that's what I've been told by people who know better than me, so that's what I go by.
Eish. That just seems wrong.
It sounds weird enough to be true.
I promise I'll forget it for next time and we'll do this all over again. Anyways, he says that Google does not support LLMS.txt and has no plans to do so. Google does this, so sometimes they say they don't do something and then they do it, or they say they do something and then they don't do it. So, you know, right now, apparently they don't and they won't. So, but this does not mean that it might not be important in the future. Ray Martinez, and I'm sorry, Ray, I have absolutely no idea who you are, but you're somebody important because you showed up on Search Engine Land. So there we go. Ray posted a screenshot of his log files to X that shows OpenAI crawling his LLMS text file about every 15 minutes. So we know OpenAI is crawling it. Others most likely are also. Doesn't really seem to matter right now. So it appears that several LLMs are crawling that text file now. Not many are using it. John Mueller noted that no AI system is currently using LLMS text.file.
Officially.
Officially. As far as he knows, about, I think it was 2 weeks ago, so the beginning of July or so, he said that this will likely change. And I do have, in relation to the story, a little Mueller bonus. Maybe that's going to be a thing I do now. Ooh. Or maybe this will be the first and last time. I don't know. it didn't justify its own whole thing, but it's relevant to this. Over at SE Roundtable, this is where this was found, John said that it might make sense to no index the LLMS text file. He says using no index for it, the file, could make sense as sites might link to it and it could otherwise become indexed, which would be weird for users. So It would be kind of weird if you did a search and it came up and you landed on that page and you didn't know anything. Like if you're not a technical person, you're like, what is this? Would it rank? Like we've never seen robots.txt files rank.
I don't know. It seems like a very low chance of anything happening there, but whatever.
But maybe it's worth doing.
What would they honestly search to find that? I don't get it. But anyway.
Well, I think because the LLMS text file isn't just directives, it can include actual content in it. So I think the idea is the content in that file, because you can have like snippets and things, right?
Mm.
Yeah. Anyways.
Okay.
That's why it's a bonus and not its whole thing.
Well, and it's a pre-bonus to the Mueller files, which is next here.
Yeah, we got a few of them.
Yeah. So we might as well tag team this one. Google on CSS and SEO. There's a lot to share here. In a recent Search Off the Record podcast, John Mueller and Martin Splitt spoke for about 40 minutes on CSS and SEO. Here are some of the key takeaways. First, I'll take his CSS file sizes. They note that the size of a CSS file has grown over the years, but be sure that the size does not get out of control. They noted an extreme example of a CSS file that was 78 megabytes, which is highly unusual and problematic. Yeah, I mean, so the CSS file is a cascading style sheet. It is what's used to essentially explain, well, it, essentially, it, it, what's the word? It explains. I want to use the word explain all the time. I get whatever. It explains to browsers how to show content that is on a page. It's like the design in a file for those who don't know. I don't know how else to put it. Anyway, what's you take the next one.
Yeah, I would just add to Ross's there and say like it defines the fonts that are used, the colors, the spacings, the margins, the aesthetics of the site are basically defined in that file.
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
they apply
everything
to the site.
Like the padding, the lines, where images show up. I mean, it's yeah, really the structural blueprint. Let's go. Hey, there we go.
Blueprint. Yeah.
Ooh, I like it. Okay.
Perfect. yeah. So they did talk a little bit as well about CSS class names and SEO. So when you set up a class in CSS, you assign a name to it. They said that those class names, and this is not a big surprise for me. It might be for some of you out there. Class names have no impact on SEO. They are purely for styling and not considered visible text content. Crawlers typically parse HTML for text and strip out attributes like class names. So if you're giving a class name, you know, and trying to insert keywords into class names, you're just wasting your time. Use whatever makes the most sense and, you know, makes it easy for you to figure out what that class does. If you ever have to go back and try to fix something and you just have like numbered classes. I've seen that before where the classes make no sense or almost like garbledygook. Good luck.
Yeah.
Really good luck with that. So
fair enough. Next is pseudo elements. CSS pseudo elements allow developers to add decorative elements like icons or small symbols before or after an element. They are not directly added to the HTML and are not picked up by Google's rendering and indexing. Only use pseudo elements for decorative purposes. Do not use them for any meaningful content.
And we got some image stuff, which is fun. So decorative images such as backgrounds, which use the background-image property within CSS, do not convey essential content. Google does not index these images, which is interesting because I feel like I've probably seen examples where they do, but I've been questioning that. I need to go back and check now because I feel like I've seen that happen before, but maybe my brain is broken. I don't know. Standard HTML image tags, IMG, which is like in the source code, should be used for all content images that are important for the site's meaning. Unless you're trying to get fancy, you're probably doing that already anyways, but there might be situations where you're trying to use CSS, so don't do that. CSS should really be strictly used for styling and not for content. Putting critical content within CSS hinders a search engine's understanding and accessibility for that image. So,
great. And finally, tables. Using CSS to create table-like layouts for tabular data is a general, in general, is a misuse. For actual tabular data, use HTML table elements, which is preferred. That's odd. Anyway, it allows search engines and screen readers to recognize rows and columns for better understanding and indexing. That's kind of surprising to me. I would have thought that they were far more advanced by now, that they could take a CSS table and understand that.
That surprised me too, because creating tables in some content management systems is a nightmare. And you have to use CSS in some of them. And from my perspective, I've tried to create tables using CSS and I have a really hard time with it as a non-programmer. I get it, how it works, it's tricky, and doing it as HTML is so easy. And I'm glad Google prefers it that way, because it's the easy way to do it.
Yeah. All right. Well, next up here, Google says that normal SEO works to get into AI overviews. Now, Gary Yish once again headed this up. And really what he's saying is, to get your content and appear in an AI review, just stick to your normal SEO practices. You don't need, quote, GEO, which is generative engine optimization, or LLM optimization, LLMO. God, there's so many acronyms. Help. Anyway, it's just getting ridiculous. But there's also some other great points here, and they were captured and posted by one of the Google dudes there, who were, I guess, live blogging it or such while he was talking. So we'll start with number one here. Search is growing and Gen Z are power users. Quote, contrary to the belief that younger generations don't use traditional search, Gary revealed that Gen Z users, those are ages 18 to 24, issue more search queries than any other age group. With over 5 trillion searches conducted globally each year, search is not only growing, but its user base is also staying young. Why don't you take the next one?
Yeah, so search is increasingly visual and interactive. The methods of searching are evolving rapidly. Google Lens has seen 65% year-over-year growth, with over 100 billion visual searches conducted this year alone. And one in every 5 of these has commercial intent. Furthermore, the new Circle to Search feature is already available on over 250 million Android devices. I can't play with that. I use an iPhone. Uh-huh. And Ross hates me for it.
laugh at you for it.
With early adopters using it for 10% of their search journeys.
I actually love that. Just to rub it in, I love that so much. It's so useful. No, actually I do, especially doing all the ancestry I've been doing lately. And if I'm uncertain of what I'm seeing, I can just circle it. I can even circle a portrait. Do you see any other versions of this, or what do you see here? And when I'm doing research for even purchasing something for the house, or actually I've been doing it even for my boat. So if there's a particular part that I need, I can take a picture of it and just show it on Google Lens, or go to my photo gallery where I did that and just circle it and see if there's anything. It's been pretty darn amazing, I gotta say. I'm surprised, actually. I wouldn't have thought that was limited. I thought that would be everywhere, even in iPhones.
I've it's not quite the circle thing, but I've been using image search more often. Like the other day we were cleaning the house and we found a thing. It's like, what the heck is this thing? And you don't want to throw it out because it's weird, and you know it's super important if it's weird. And I honestly can't remember what it was. So we took a picture of it, did a Google search, and it told us exactly what it was. It was like, I don't know how our parents survived. You know, like before technology, you'd have to go to the library, and you'd have, you know, like it would take you days to figure out what this thing is, and now you can do it in a second. And I think we probably threw it away after that too. But
it just
anyways.
Goes to show how much slower life was then, which is a good thing in many ways.
Yeah.
You could just go, and you'd have to go to the library, spend some time, go through things. I mean, it was more labor intensive, but it was less immediate gratification, which just moves us on to the next thing and becomes addictive.
Totally.
I find. I'm going to skip this one and go back to it because I want to do this last one so bad. Is SEO dead? No, it's evolving. Gary humorously debunked the recurring question of SEO's demise, noting that people have claimed SEO is dying since 1997.
Since before it was SEO.
Yeah, I don't actually remember SEO. When I started my business, I don't think they even called it SEO yet. I don't know. Anyway, that's when I started in 97. But anyway, he stressed that the fundamental principles of SEO are more important than ever for appearing in new AI-powered features. The advice remains the same. Focus on creating helpful, reliable content. These new tech, unless you're in the health industry, who just got nailed hard. These new technologies are creating more opportunities for creators, not eliminating them. Now, what do you think of that, Scott?
Yeah, I think I mostly agree with it, I guess. I don't know.
I kind of call BS. I'm not saying that SEO is dead. I don't mean that. I just mean that they're creating more opportunities. I mean, for creators, yes, but not necessarily content, like text content, mostly for visual content, I would say. I don't know. Like websites, I think they're pushing us to using their systems like YouTube and these different creator platforms where more money is generated and they can put their, you know, they can have a piece of ownership of them. Websites alone, they're going to have a hard time succeeding, I think, in this new world. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. The last one here is AI is fundamentally reshaping the search experience. Gary describes AI overviews as one of the most significant changes to search in 20 years. There's no doubt about that. Data shows that users of AI overviews search more frequently and express greater satisfaction. He also introduced AI mode, a more powerful experience for complex queries that require advanced reasoning and multi-step planning, allowing users to conduct deeper, breathier research. That is a quote.
Breathier.
Or breathier? Breathier sounds right. Yeah. Anyway. Go, Gary, go.
More satisfaction. This is one I don't really agree with. I mean, I will say, you know, some searches, AI overviews are just nailing it, but it depends on the type of search. Like if I ask, you know, how many pounds to a kilogram kind of thing, like basic math type questions, is bang on every time. If you ask it something that could have any wiggle room, well, who knows what you're going to get? Unless it's a hard fact, obvious answer that's agreed upon by everybody, who knows?
Yeah. I guess I take back what I said. I do think it certainly has increased my satisfaction with search from a user's point of view, because I'm typically not searching anything that's your money or your life, you know, YMYL, which is one of the areas they're very cautious with. And so when I do get an answer and it's quick, it is kind of satisfying to get the hell out of there fast.
Yeah.
There's that. But yeah, I think it's a good layer. It's a very good layer. I don't want it to replace everything because I don't think it's there yet. And when things get to that point, I think we're going to be more trouble than just search. If AI gets that smart. More worried about that than search engines.
When all we have is Google. When you do a Google search and it's not even AI overviews, it's just AI and there are no citations and it just gives you the answer from who knows where. Like that could happen.
Maybe. Yeah.
I hope it doesn't, but
there we go.
We'll all be flocking to DuckDuckGo.
Exactly. Or maybe even Bing will get more of the market. We'll see.
Yeah, that's true, right?
All right. So what's next?
All right. Google search doesn't support different product pricing by state. This was a little bit interesting because I don't know that I've seen that situation with any clients ever where their pricing is different on a per state level, but I guess that could happen. So John had actually issued a short YouTube video saying that Google does not have a mechanism to handle product pricing that differs by state. So if you have a product that is priced differently in California than say it is in New York State, there's no way to tell Google. So John suggests two ways to handle this. One, and I don't understand this honestly, but this is like what John said, is to use the tax field to adjust the price of the product to the final amount per state. All right, take that as you will. That's what John says. I don't know.
Oh, I see. So essentially, the person would have to either you'd automatically find out what state they're in by geo, or you'd, if that wasn't available, you'd have to have them pick which state they're in before the price changes, and then the tax mm-hmm. would reflect that state's tax.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So that's one option. The other, he says, and I kind of hate this option, is to create a separate product page for each individual state. Now, I didn't like that idea. And then I got thinking, can you use hreflang for states and provinces? Because I've never had to do that. And I just didn't know. And apparently you can. You can specify individual states. So you could have a page for California and a page for New York State with the hreflangs referencing one another. So that would be an option. If you're in a situation, again, I've never seen this situation in real life, but if you're there, that could be the workaround. But maybe someday Google will allow you to differentiate it through structured markup or some other way. But those are your options as of today, according to John. So.
Wow. Hreflang is pretty powerful if it's done right, isn't it?
Cool. Yeah, I think it would work. I mean, it works for country level stuff. I can't see why it wouldn't for state or provincial or maybe even like county and parishes. And how else do we break up a country? I don't know. All the ways a country is broken up. Yeah.
Yeah. Boroughs and you name it.
Yeah.
Okay. How to handle old, quote, show web pages. All right. John Mueller gives advice on what to do with show and event pages after the date has lapsed. John was asked via Blue Sky, which is a great social platform, by the way. I keep saying that because I think everyone needs to be using it more than Facebook.
Rossbot shares.
Yeah, I wish there was. No, actually, I don't want to be anything to do with social shares. Thank you.
Yeah.
This is the question. I'm going to read this verbatim, and it doesn't sound like right English anyway. What to do with shows on their own URLs that have passed their performance date? These URLs are unlikely to get any traffic or minimal. Do I delete or keep? His response, paraphrased, I see it a bit like products that are sold out or which are no longer made. For some products or shows, a site might be a fantastic long-term reference if the product is sufficiently unique and interesting for users long afterwards. If you're the last or only one to run a show, that's a nice reference to keep for longer. People will seek it out. For other products, there might be a time-limited interest, perhaps for a few months, such as, I went to X show last month and I liked it. Who was in it? For these, perhaps you want to give a bit of time for things to drop out of interest and then 404 the pages. And for yet others, maybe you have a lot of things coming and going on the site. Perhaps you just 404 immediately to clean up and move on. And you had a general recommendation here, Scott.
Yeah, so mine, and I've said this a trillion times, really, but is whenever any page or event or otherwise is removed, 301 redirect it to a suitable replacement. Or you could serve a 404 or a 410. 410 means gone. But if that page has any value at all, if it has even one inbound link pointing to it that somebody built or has a few rankings, if you redirect it to the most relevant higher level page, you might retain some of that value. So you could just 404 it, but why risk losing anything? Now, there might be situations where maybe you have events coming and going weekly and the turnover is so quick on your site that, you know, first of all, none of that content will be there long enough to establish these links or really any value. So why bother? And maybe the workload involved in redirecting them is just too ridiculous. So 404 is okay, or 410 might be better in some cases, but I don't know, if you can 301 it, you just retain and hang on to any little morsel of value that you really can. I don't know. That's the way I look at it anyways.
I guess the only problem is you could end up with way too many 301s.
You could. There's also something else. And I actually had a call with a client recently, and they have events, and they were actually asking essentially the same question: where should they redirect it to? And they were suggesting, should they redirect it to another similar event? And I was like, no, definitely don't do that, because then you're going to end up in the long term having crazy weird redirect chains, because then that event is gone, and then you're going to redirect it to another event, and it's just going to be ugly. So, you know, I would say to a top level category, something that won't likely change is probably best, but you know, is it scalable? Like maybe, but maybe not. I guess, like you said, it depends. If you're talking maybe you have a website that's like an events calendar for Vegas or something like that, where there's just millions of events always happening, your redirect list is going to be just crazy long. So it's probably not sensible to do that. So
no, I would like, in a lot of cases, they have a central page for a specific act.
Yep.
And then from there, they can have sub pages for their different events coming up, or maybe the odd one that's expired, but I would generally just expire them and just have that one page as your main page.
Yeah. Or a that venue page or something like that.
Yeah. And hopefully that will help. And then anyone searching for, let's say, the next Sting show or whatever it might be, they can easily find that page and go, is there another one coming up? And it makes things a lot easier to manage.
I love how you reference Sting, because it's just a good segue into your 70th birthday, which is coming up, right? You're 70?
Shut up. Yeah. Oh, shut up.
Sorry, I might be wrong on that number.
Yeah, just a bit. Not 80. Even 50 yet. No. Yeah, and a last note, I want to mention that anyone out there who is currently, you know, having some issues with content these days, you know, trying to put together a content plan, considering AI and all of the new strategies in place that are required to succeed, yeah, let us know. I'm digging into this deeply these days, doing a lot of research, creating our a brand new layout based on all of the proven tactics I've gotten from colleagues and from some private forums and et cetera, trying to get as much information as I can. I'm pretty excited about what we're putting together. So if you want to have a chat, at the very least, book one of our free strategy calls on our website, and you'll be speaking directly with me, and we can chat. It's free, and we'll see if we can help you out, or at least gab a bit about what you're up to and what might be possible in the future. All righty. Well, with that said, on behalf of myself, Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and my company's senior SEO, Scott Vanak, thank you for joining us today. Remember, we have a show notes newsletter you can sign up for at SEO101radio.com. Have a great week, and remember to tune into future episodes, which air every week on WMR.fm.
Awesome. Thank you for listening, everybody.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.